Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Sign on the Dotted Line edition. Following Tuesday's big news that Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap have signed contract extensions to remain with the Bengals for the next several years. Coming up, I'll have the details about their deals, and my broadcast partner Dave Lapham will join me to discuss last Sunday's win at Buffalo and this Thursday's preseason finale against the Indianapolis Colts. Plus, in this week's Fun Facts segment, you'll get to know one of this year's college free agents who has tried to make the 53-man roster or the practice squad, safety Trayvon Henderson. We'll discuss a wide variety of topics ranging from what it was like to attend the University of Hawaii to his current hairdo. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since Bushnell Extra Wide Binoculars, the football broadcaster's best friend. They provide a much wider field of view than normal binoculars, so they are very helpful when the view from the radio booth is like calling a game from the space shuttle. Let's get to the big news. On Tuesday, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap signed contract extensions. They were already under contract for this year, so in Geno's case, tack on four more years for a reported $65.3 million. In Dunlap's case, tack on three more years for a reported $45 million. That's more than $110 million combined. Geno is a six-time Pro Bowler who led all NFL interior linemen in sacks last year with nine and has either led or shared the lead among interior linemen five times in the last 7 years. He is fourth on the Bengals' all-time sacks list. Dunlap is a two-time Pro Bowler who ranks second on the Bengals' all-time sacks list, 19 behind Eddie Edwards and 3.5 ahead of his fellow member of the 2010 draft class, Geno Atkins. Geno's deal is reportedly front-loaded and will pay him more than $25 million this year. That's significant because A.J. Green has 2 years left on his current contract, and this puts the Bengals in position to extend his deal at roughly the same time next year. With Atkins and Dunlap locked up, the Bengals are loaded on the defensive line with those two plus young studs like Carl Lawson, Jordan Willis, Andrew Billings, Sam Hubbard, Ryan Glasgow, and more. That's where I start this week's conversation with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, let's start with the Bengals' defensive line in that game last Sunday at Buffalo. Five sacks in the first half, six in the game. Looking at the Buffalo press the next day, the big story was the Bills' offensive line is terrible. So I guess that's the thing you never quite know for sure when you're watching preseason games. But how much do you think it was Bengals' defensive excellence up front, and how much was it Buffalo's shaky up front?
I think a combination. You know, it always is. You never, as the old saying goes, you're never as good as you think. You're never as bad as you think in all phases of sports, really. But they weren't very good in pass protection. They ran the ball pretty efficiently. They ran the ball pretty well. And you'd think with a running game that they'd have an easier time pass protecting, but they didn't. They were just horrendous. I mean, it was a free-for-all to get to the quarterback. There was a lot of times there were three, sometimes all four guys, you know, just a sprint to the quarterback and all arriving at the same time. I felt sorry for Josh Allen. He never really had a chance to collect his thoughts, never mind, you know, scan the field. But the interesting thing, Dan, in that game is as great and sexy as those sacks are, they had six for the game. The Bengals had allowed seven running plays to go for negative yards. So the Bengals had more negative plays than the Buffalo Bills did. But the sacks are like, oh, it's a quarterback sack. You know, you have a three-yard quarterback sack or you have a three-yard tackle for loss, it's you're still second and 13. You know, it's like you're off schedule. So the Bengals ran the ball 27 times, seven of them, over 25%, went for negative yards. So it was interesting. When you can't run like that, you're thinking you're going to have a hard time pass protecting. And it was just the opposite. They pass protected very well for Andy Dalton. He never had a fingernail laid on him. But when you're averaging 10 carries, 10 yards, averaging 1 yard a rush in the first half, and you still put up like 230-plus yards passing, it was a strange game. And the Bills ran, for almost 7 yards a pop in the first half, and they couldn't pass protect worth a darn. So it was almost like it broke all rules of football a little bit the way that game unfolded. But it was interesting to watch. But to answer your question about the defensive line of the Bengals, man, they've all got explosion. You know, they can convert, you know, quickness to power. It's a good group. And Michael Johnson and Geno Atkins, when they're inside together, they've been around together so long, they have real good feel on the stunts and the twists. They have kind of like that, you know, unspoken communication that they've got going. And all the young guys in the rotation that are, you know, 23, 24, 25 years old, it's going to be a very impressive group to watch. The thing that they have to start to do now, in my mind, Dan, is start working every day against chips, defensive ends, whamming the defensive ends. They're not going to put their guys in one-on-ones. They're going to max protect a lot, and they're going to keep backs in. They're going to chip with the backs. They're going to keep a tight end at the line of scrimmage and pass protection. It's not going to be 4-on-5 the way they're showing themselves. So I would, you know, jump ahead and really start working techniques on extra bodies on the perimeter, making sure now, you know, with Geno and then Billings showing his ability to maybe push inside. There's only so much you can do. If you have two guys that can do that, that's a tough dynamic to handle. But it's easier to handle the edge, you know, with some help than it is inside, unless you keep a back inside and has to double team, you know, like a defensive tackle, let him get up the field, which has happened against Geno before. They've done that. But, man, you can't double everybody. There's nobody left in the pass routes, you know. So whoever is getting doubled, whether they're sliding the line and double-teaming the other guy that they're sliding away from, however it goes where there are two bodies on one, the guy who's singled up, he has to make hay. And they have an ability for any one of those guys, when they're singled up, that person can make some hay potentially.
2.5 sacks for Carl Lawson, 1.5 for Andrew Billings. We've been raving on these podcasts during the preseason about Billings' emergence. I want to talk about another guy, Jordan Willis, who seems to really be taking a step forward in year two.
Couldn't agree more, Dan. He seems like he's a 10-year veteran, the way he approaches the game. He's Michael Johnson Jr., you know, at that age. Same type of personality in terms of, this is my craft. I'm going to work on it every single day. I'm going to do everything I can to be the best I can be. This is extremely important to me. This is not, you know, you're blessed to be here. This is not a right, it's a privilege. You know, all the things that you want your players to have, he had it immediately. I couldn't believe how mature he was in terms of not only his overall maturity as a person, but his maturity to his craft of professional football. Man. The dude has everything you want in terms of, you know, the focus on the tasks mentally and physically, you know, the ability to finish. You know, to me, toughness is how you finish. That tells me if you're a tough football player or not. If you don't finish plays, you don't have the right toughness. And that guy finishes all the plays, and Sam Hubbard's the same way. I mean, they're blessed with young guys. Sam Hubbard and Willis are cut from that same type of cloth. You know, both of those guys are, oh gosh, it seems like they've been around for not just weeks and months, but years. It's crazy.
Banner day for Andy Dalton, 11 for 16, 180 yards, 2 touchdown passes, no picks, passer rating over 145, leaves the game of the Bengals leading 20-0. To me, his preseason can be summed up by the touchdown pass he made to A.J. Green. A.J. had not come out of his break yet, so you're anticipating where he's going to be. He was well covered, and that ball was perfectly located, and that's really the way he's performed this preseason.
Bingo. Right on the money. And it was 3rd and 12 in the red zone. A third down touchdown in the red zone with 12 yards to go? Wow. Now you've got something cooking, you know? So the whole circumstances of that situational football play, for it to be executed as well as it was, like you said, because the coverage certainly wasn't horrendous. AJ's AJ, though, and, you know, even when he's covered, he's not. So you put it there and put it in a good spot, he makes the catch and backpedals into the end zone inside the pylon. I agree with you. I think the only throw that I can really think of and say, oh, man, was Dallas, you know, that third down throw, a 3rd and 5 on the first drive of the Dallas game. They just misfired those two. Other than that, man, it has been money with a capital N and dollar sign M and dollar signs everywhere. So, yeah, it's exciting to watch them. and Tyler Boyd and Andy have developed a nice connection. And then get Tyler Eifert back in the mix, you know, like what happened on Sunday night. You know, it's the thing that was amazing to me is how well the Bengals threw the football when they couldn't run it at all. And you're thinking, all right, well, the first play of the game, you go 57 yards over the top, so now Buffalo's going to back off. Well, it was a preseason game, so they weren't game playing. You know, it's a little different, but you think, the box should be wide open. Now it should be able to run the heck out of it. Could not run it a lick. So that 57-yard bomb, the first play of the game, they didn't. You know, the Bills really didn't flinch too much. Still couldn't run the football all that well. But that, get that on tape. Defensive coordinators, Dan, don't like the ball thrown over their players' heads. And they don't like one-play drives. And do you tilt the safeties to A.J.? Do you tilt them, you know, over to Ross? Do you tilt them both ways and play cover two? Now Eifert's down the middle. You know, Mixon's down the middle. Geo's down the middle. I mean, geez. It's going to pose some problems if that offensive line holds up and pass protects like they did on Sunday night.
A lot of the runs so far in the preseason have been wide stuff. Do you think they are saving more straight ahead type running plays for the regular season?
You know, you would think so. In my mind, you know, there's two ways to approach it. If you're playing 300 and whatever pound defensive tackles, the philosophy is make them run, pursue, chase. So, you know, you could do your stretch, your outside zones, your wide stuff, and fatigue them a little bit and then start hammering them in the middle between the tackles. Or you can go the other way around. You know, you can try to hammer in the middle, make them bunch you crowded up, and then get to the perimeter. It seemed like, though, that they really wanted to work on their outside zone and their, you know, their wide plays for sure. But I do think once they start the game plan, I think it'll look a lot different. And when they give Andy the total freedom to audibleize and do whatever, and all the quarterbacks. I mean, Andy's only in for part of the football game, so they're not overloading the quarterbacks. It's pretty vanilla, you know, looking at everything. But then again, you look at the tape, and Joe Mixon's tried to hit a home run every run. You know, it's like, man, you're a big, powerful, physical guy. If there's a crease, just take it. Don't wait for a bigger crease. Take the first crease you see and, you know, turn it. Don't go minus two trying to make people miss. Go plus two or three, you know, and or a 4-yard run becomes 6 or 8 yards if you hit it right. So I think there's still that dynamics going on between offensive line and running back, getting that timing synced up, because there are a lot of new faces and bodies up front from the offensive line to get in sync with Joe and Gio and everybody in the backfield.
Do you think Frank Pollock knows his starting five up front?
I think he's got a pretty good handle. I think he's got a pretty good idea. You know, and the thing with Alex Redmond, I mean, like we talked about before, you know, do you go to an airline that has 10 flights that you need to take over the course of a month for your job? And on 8 of the flights, they're on time and maybe 3 of them early, but 2, they cancel the flight. Or do you go to an airline that all 10 flights, they arrive on time all 10 times? You know, that consistency. That's what that's the dynamic the coaches are looking at with Alex. I mean, he's just got to calm down because, man, remember we talked about during the game, I watched him I'm going to zero in on him. And he took this rookie third-round defensive lineman from Buffalo and just jammed him and right to the ground. He buckled him, just caved him right to the ground, and then jumped on top of him to bury him. I mean, he'll put you in the dirt and work you. He's a beast. He's nasty, but can't have the penalties. You know, flinches, jumps off sides, holding penalty, and he tried to almost. You know, he knew he was beaten, so he reached out and tried to take the feet out from under the. You have to realize when. You don't try to do the impossible and don't hurt your team even more, you know. So he's just going to get snaps and calm down. But, boy, the snaps when he's playing like he plays, oh, man. He could grade ridiculous numbers if he just does not, you know, commit the penalties. They're killers. They're killers. There's no doubt about it. That's why, you know, I don't know what they're going to do because, you know, here it is Tuesday before Thursday game and they played Sunday night. So we just had one press conference here with Marvin, but if I'm thinking if I project myself as an offensive line coach, I may play Billy Price and Alex Redmond a little bit in this last preseason game. Not a ton, but just more opportunity to calm down, get used to each other, you know, get the fits a little bit, all of that. And not any kind of punishment or anything like that, you know, not singling you out. You're not doing a good enough job. It's just they're so young, and, you know, they need to – Billy needs to just calm down a little bit. Just, you know, take the reps, take the repetition. He's a really good football player. And just don't – just, you know, shift, downshift a little bit. These guys are in, like, overdrive, you know. Just put it in drive and just go. And give them maybe a series or two together in that game.
That comes with experience, right?
It does. You know, it can't. It's all fixable. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. I mean, if you're, you know, I don't know, maybe you have to see a sports psychologist and be hypnotized or something. I don't know. But, I mean, I do think if he cleans up, if Redmond cleans up his penalty issue, and that's a big if. It's got to happen. He has to show it. You can talk about it all you want. He has to show it. And if you're a coach, you're gun shy. If you're, you know, third and one, the Indianapolis Colts in the regular season, you're at the 12-yard line. It's third and one. You jump. Now it's third and six. You don't, you know, the drive ends. You know, you have to kick a field goal. You're down seven or you're down four, whatever it is, toward the end of the game. That's what you're worried about. If he's jumping now, what about in the pressure situations when you're on the road and it's so loud and you can't hear and you can't communicate? And that's, you know, that's a dynamic that's his problem right now becomes magnified and on steroids. You know, it becomes a massive problem because if it's a meaningless preseason game and you're doing it, it's not a good sign, not a good indicator. So it's a tough tough decision for the coaches. How comfortable will you feel with it?
Final game of the preseason coming up on Thursday night at home against the Colts. By and large, the starters won't play. But it's a critical game for some of the guys at the bottom of the roster who are trying desperately to hold on to an NFL job, whether it's on the 53-man roster or the 10-player practice squad. I was talking to tight end Mason Schreck, who had a nice game in Buffalo, and I more or less said, how important do you think this game is for you in trying to be on the practice squad, realistically? He said, this is the most important game of my life. So that tells you, for some of these guys, people are going to laugh at game four of the preseason. It's bad football. It's a bunch of guys that aren't going to make it. Well, for a bunch of these guys, it's huge.
No question. Absolutely no question. And I can remember, you know, I was in a battle for a roster spot as a rookie. I was drafted in the third round, and the other All-American guard from Nebraska was drafted in the fourth round, Darrell White. And it's like, man, I mean, you're playing, it's desperation. But you can't let it be desperation. You have to be poised. You know, you can't be like, if something does go wrong, you can't be, oh, no, I'm not going to make the team. You're done. You might as well just take yourself out of the game. You have to be able to, like we were talking about earlier at lunch, put the bad away, like golf, you know, put a bad shot away and continue to play. You have to put a bad play away and don't compound the problem. If you jump once, you can't, oh, man. And then jump two more times because you're all Wang Chung'd about jumping once. You know, you have to put it aside. And that's how these guys have to play. There's 37 guys from 32 teams that are going to hit the waiver wire over the weekend. Over 1,100 guys. Every single one of those guys, this is the most important however many minutes of football that they're going to have in their careers to this stage, because they're all fighting for, like you said, Dan, you know, those last seven spots on the 53-man roster. They'll be deactivated, but they're on the squad or those 10 practice squad, which is a six-figure deal. Mm-hmm. How many college graduates go get a six-figure job coming out?
Wasn't me. I can tell you that.
I hear that, Coach. So, you know, it's a good, it's good eats. It's good living. And plus, even take those jobs away. Canadian Football League. There's the XFL is returning. There's the Alliance Football League with Bill Polian and Ebersol's son that, you know, is trying to they're looking for football players. So you're trying to continue your professional career. And this, you know, people say game three is the dress rehearsal. This is the final audition. Game four is the final audition for all of these guys that are trying to make the back end of rosters around the National Football League. Some guys will be taping their ankles up and putting pads on for the last time and helmets on their head for the last time as a professional player. And you don't want to be one of those guys. So it is. I mean, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot. So those guys, they're going to get an adrenaline rush like the guys playing in the Super Bowl. It's that significant and that important to these guys.
How big is this game for Barkley versus Driscoll to be backup quarterback?
Big. Yeah, I think it's big. And talked about it a little bit during the broadcast. To me, Barkley has to outperform him hugely. And I'm not sure even if it's one time that happens that I've almost made my mind up, I guess, which you can't do. You have to let the players decide. The players have to play it out. And this is a very important game for those guys. But when you look at it, Driscoll runs a 4.540. Driscoll has performed on special teams for this organization. He was volunteering to play wide receiver and broke his arm playing wide receiver in practice toward the end of the season.
Can I be devil's advocate, though, on this? Because if he is your backup quarterback, your number two quarterback as opposed to three,
yeah,
where he was last year, he can't do any of that stuff.
He can't, but he has the in a worst-case scenario, he could do that, yeah, if needed. Like, if he's active and up and they're desperate for a guy, he can go out there and cover a kickoff for you, mm-hmm. Barkley couldn't imagine that, Or if they have, like, God forbid, two or three receivers go down, he might be able to line up and finish a game for you that way. Barkley can't give you that versatility. But I agree with you. Can't do it on a – he's your backup quarterback at that point. But the last thing is you're preparing for the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson packages. This guy runs a 4.5. He can give you a better look at what Lamar Jackson could be than Matt Barkley could, and that's vitally important. You've got Watson, you've got Jackson, you've all these athletes, RG3, if he ends up making it in the NFL and playing somewhere, all these athletes at quarterback that have the foot speed and the two-way, deal they can hurt you. Defensive coordinators would love to have a guy like Jeff Driscoll on the roster that could give the picture of that opposition quarterback as you're, getting ready to play that game. To me, that's even a tiebreaker. When you start evaluating, if they're performing on the field at the same level, that's a tiebreaker. If Barkley is dramatically outperforming him, it's not. But I don't see Barkley dramatically outperforming him at this point.
Driscoll has practice squad eligibility, but you don't think he'd make it?
I'm not sure that he'd clear, based on he might, and that's the thing. We fall in love with our own players, and everybody's got, defensive backs, wide receivers, a quarterback. Man, I wish I could keep this guy. So do you bring in the other team's guy?
That's how the Bengals got him in the first place. I'm sure the 49ers thought he was going to make it to their practice squad.
True.
After they drafted him late, and the Bengals gobbled him up.
True. And the other thing is Barkley's going into his sixth year. He's had NFL starts. And really, when I watch him, it's like, is he seeing it like a sixth-year guy? Is he accurate like a sixth-year guy, So I think right now you know what Matt Barkley's ceiling is because it's 6 years. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just 6 years of training camps or whatever, it's 6 years. Driscoll might have more potential upside that way. But, yeah, to your point, I'm not sure. With the dearth at the quarterback position, you put the tape on, you see how athletic he is and everything. I'm not sure that he would he'd clear every team and come back.
All right, get all of the Buffalo Bills information out of your head. Quickly insert 90 Indianapolis players, and we'll do it on Thursday night.
Thursday night. And like you said, Dan, people are like, oh, man, fourth preseason game, and what are we doing? What, do you even want to watch this? 37 guys on both rosters are saying, watch, because we're going to put on a show. But it's going to be very, very vanilla, elementary, fundamental football. Can the linebacker knock the guard out of his shoes and separate and make a tackle? Can the corner break on the football and make a play on it? Simple things that you're really evaluating your players. It's not going to be exotic pressure packages and, all kinds of formations and motions and window drive, because they play each other. Even if you're doing it with backup players, it's on tape and they're looking at what you're doing with them. So you don't want to give away anything that you might think about using that opener.
Thursday's game starts at 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage on the Bengals Radio Network gets underway at 5:30. Now time for this week's Fun Facts segment as we get to know the person under the pads. When the Bengals released veteran safety George Iloka last week, a big reason was to free up salary cap space that was used to extend the contracts of Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap. But the Bengals were able to cut Iloka because they like what they've seen from their young safeties at training camp, including an impressive rookie who slipped through the cracks in this year's draft. Time for some fun facts with Bengals rookie safety Trayvon Henderson from Sacramento, California, the capital of California. Let's turn the clock back a little bit to when you were growing up. Was football always your game, or did you play a little bit of everything?
Majority football and basketball. Those are the two sports I was, you know, bouncing between. As a kid, I just loved playing both of them, but, you know, as I got older, football, you know, became more of my life.
Other than sports, what were you into as a kid?
No lie, I just like playing. I want to go outside. You know what play tag is with your,
sure.
Your friend? Yeah, play tag, ride around the neighborhood on our bikes, play video games a lot. So it wasn't anything out of the ordinary, you know, like what kids usually would do.
Your speed comes from playing tag.
Yeah, basically.
We're visiting with Bengals safety Trayvon Henderson. Who are your favorite athletes growing up?
Since I'm a safety, I like Brian Dawkins. That was my favorite safety growing up. But when I first started playing football, I wanted to be a receiver. And I like Randy Moss.
Do you have a talent that most people don't know about?
Nah.
We all do.
Not that I could think of. I mean, I'm a cool person, I guess.
I guess that qualifies.
I'm not sure if that counts as a, you know, a talent.
For the purposes of this interview, we will count it. After graduating from Grant Union High School, you went to the University of Hawaii. How'd you end up there?
Man, crazy thing is, you know, Coach Jones, the defensive back coach here.
Durante Jones.
Yeah, he was working at Hawaii at the time. And he's one who – actually, they gave me my first scholarship my junior year of high school. And they was just, you know, behind me, supporting me ever since, you know, it came close to time to signing, you know, the letter of intent. And I felt like they gave me the most love. They were consistent, you know, checking up on me, see how my grades were, how did I do last week in the game. So I figured if they showed that much love, you know, a five-hour flight away, you know, what it'd be like when I get there.
I can think of worse places to go to college.
Yeah, that is true. I know somebody who went to Wisconsin. Not saying the school was bad, it's just the weather. Like, it's so cold here. Man.
Trayvon, how does a kid get his schoolwork done when he's going to college in Hawaii?
The coaches, you know, they do a good job of making sure you have tutors and stuff like that. You don't have a study hall, but it always comes down to, you know, whether or not you want to do it. So you can go to study hall, but you can also go there and not do your homework. So it's within.
You spent 5 years there. What was the best part of living in Hawaii for you?
The versatility of, like, the race. Like, it was a lot of people there from all over the place. So, you know, I met a lot of good people. You know, I still keep in contact with them, you know, to this day. So I think the best thing was just, you know, meeting new people.
One big setback during your college career was tearing your ACL in your third year against Ohio State. How did it happen, and how long did it take you to be 100%?
It happened. It was like the third play on defense. And it was, man, we played it so perfect. I played every play the same, but I played like a different technique every time, so they didn't really know what I was doing. So I came off the edge and blitzed, and they were in Wildcat. And Braxton Miller, I wrapped him up, and he tried to spin off me, but I held on. But my leg got caught in the ground, but my body twisted. And then I tore my ACL that way. And it took me a while to get back because I took my time. I didn't want to rush it. I had basically a whole year. They said it's, you know, average like 9 months. So, you know, I just took my time, you know, making sure I was healthy. So I was ready for the next season. I was ready, you know, to the next season, but it took a while.
We're talking to Trayvon Henderson. You had a great career at Hawaii, 9 interceptions, 5 sacks, and you earned an invitation to the Senior Bowl where you get to practice and play against the best of the best. What was that experience like for you?
It was good. I loved it, you know, every bit of it. Talking to a lot of teams, I really didn't even know that they had interest in me because we're in Hawaii, so, you know, a lot of people don't come to the games because of the distance. And I think it was good, you know, for me to be around so much good talent and, you know, basically see where I was playing at Hawaii and stuff, and, you know, just to compare myself with everybody else. But it was fun. I feel like I did a good job, and I loved it.
I read some articles after the Senior Bowl, and pretty much everyone that I read suggested that you were going to be drafted somewhere the third to fifth round, something like that, and then it didn't happen. How difficult was that to stomach when you weren't selected in the draft?
I really wouldn't say it was hard to believe. I came from Hawaii, not saying it's a bad school or anything, but, you know, it's just not one of the top schools. So I felt like it was going to be a little harder for me to get there. But I wasn't discouraged by it at all. You know, a lot of good athletes come undrafted, and those ones are usually the people who stay in the league the longest. So I wasn't, you know, down about myself at all. I didn't question my talent. You know, I feel like I'm still a good player, and, you know, I just had a good mindset.
We're doing Fun Facts with Trayvon Henderson. So you signed with the Bengals as a college free agent, and you mentioned that you had a connection with this coaching staff, Durante Jones, who was in Hawaii when you first got there. Was that the key factor for you winding up here, or was it something else?
Most definitely. I feel like there was something else, but that was the main thing. He's the one who actually called me on draft day, and I honestly didn't even know that they had interest in me until he made the phone call. But, yeah, that was the main reason why I ended up here.
All right, a few non-Bengals, non-football questions for you. Have you ever had a job other than professional athlete?
Nah. I mean, I got paid to play Pop Warner, if that counts.
Excuse me?
Yeah, just a little bit. It was for 1 year, though.
Interesting. What do you spend your money on?
Food. I spend a lot of money on food.
Like fine dining foodie stuff or healthy food?
It don't matter what kind of food it is. Whatever I want, whatever I'm craving, that's what I'm if I want to eat healthy, I'm going to go eat healthy. If I don't, I don't. But most of my money go to food, and that's been since I've been in college.
All right, tell me about the hair. How long have you had these dreads, and what was the inspiration?
Well, I'm kind of lazy when it comes to hair and stuff like that, so I feel like dreads is, you know, an escape goat to wake up and go. So one of the reasons why I got them. The other reason is because I honestly think they're just cool. Just, you know, throw them up. You can do a lot of hairstyles with them. And I had my hair for 1 year. I had, like, grew an afro for 1 year. And then after that year is when I twisted them. So I had my hair dreaded for 1 year. So I grew them for 1 year, had them dreaded for 1 year. So total of two.
I can identify with get up and go. I haven't had a bad hair day in, like, 25 years.
It's a great feeling, man.
It's good. Hey, it's great to have you here in Cincinnati. You're having a great camp. Keep it up, and best of luck going forward.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Henderson is sure to get a bunch of snaps on defense and special teams against the Colts on Thursday as he tries to earn a spot on the roster or practice squad. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play and give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback has been very helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.